Testing, 1, 2, 3, okay. After our breakfast, you're supposed to have your formal sitting and walking meditation, followed by daily mindfulness training. We are standing in contemplation, bowing, etc. as before, at the main shrine hall. Okay, what we will do is, now it's already... Okay, 9:20. I was told just now at the Kuan Yin Pond and Maitreya place, many of you can't hear what I speak. So there are requests that I repeat them. I will. So we have to take away half an hour of your meditation time. So maybe we will do a simple puja first. Then just now at the stupa there, I already renew your 5 precepts. The reason being, after that, I think after it's about 2 o'clock, most of you all will be leaving. So if I don't renew your precept, you may have to hold on to the 8 precepts until you reverse them. But don't worry. Then for those who want to continue your 8 precepts, it's very simple. You only need to renew your 8 precepts anytime, even at home, in front of your altar, or when you are in the shrine. So you don't need to purposely wait for the person who administer the precept to reverse it for you. But it will be good if he can reverse it for you, because this is supposed to help out people be mindful of what all these precepts are. But there are some who are very fearful in the sense that they might have heard from other people say, if you ask that person, that monk or that teacher to administer the precept, you must get him to reverse for you, otherwise you will be holding on to it for life. I mean, there are some truth in that, if you understand. But it's not as rigid as what was told to you. Cultivation is not about fear of the unknown. You have to find out yourself. Precepts are administered because during the Buddha's time, it is a tradition for those who are in the position to administer this precept to give it to you, because they know the importance of precept. So that when they administer to you the precept, they will explain to you the significance and why you have to keep. And this precept, when given, you have to hold on to it seriously, with understanding. Then later on, the normal cases, they will reverse it for you, just like today, we already did it at the stupa. So for this morning, again, I will do a simple, usual morning puja, where we will chant the salutation to the Triple Gem. Then we will recite the salutation to the Buddha, take refuge, renew our 5 precepts. Those who want to hold on to your 8 precepts, you can request. Then we will administer for you. But no need to request, better you do it yourself. Otherwise, you have to look for me if you want to reverse it back. There is no hard and fast rule about this. If you understand, it's only your understanding. If you are sincere, you have the faith, you want to reverse, you just chant in front of the Buddha. Then you administer your own precept with understanding, and you do it with clear understanding. Then no more problem. Okay, now we will pay respect to Triple Gem. Then we will have a very simple morning puja. A Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Sokato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghang namami. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata Veeramane Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Adina Dana Veeramane Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Kamesu Micchacharya Veeramane Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Musavada Veeramane Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Suramiraya Majjhapamadatana Veeramane Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones. Okay, after remind me, we supposed to go and pay our respect at this Lord Shiva, the altar there, the shrine. Then there's also a cave nearby. We can also go and pay our respect. Then before we leave this place, our lunch is 12 to 1. Maybe after lunch, you assemble here quickly. Then we can go to Lord Shiva there. We pay our respect. Then the cave. Then we come back here at about 1:30. You're supposed to leave at 2. But we need to have a formal closing ceremony so that we can also make whatever donation and offering to this way place. Then we should thank Brother Lim and the owner of this place for allowing us the condition to make use of this place, to hold our retreat, thereby enabling us to have all the wholesomeness, the joy, the cultivation, and all the good condition for Dhamma to be shared. We should also bear in mind that there are many Kalyanamitas who help organize, prepare, and provide a lot of support for this retreat. So we should thank them. We should have gratitude towards them. Then we should invoke the power of merits for their wholesomeness. All these are virtuous, meritorious action. It will bring forth the good mind, the wholesome mind, that can shine forth and allow you to develop the cultivation appropriately. The mind that has goodness, kindness, virtue, like sincerity, gratitude, contentment, appreciative joy, sympathetic joy, love, compassion, wisdom, and equanimity. These are the virtues that you should cultivate more and more. Those that are still not in you, put in the right effort to develop them. In order to develop them, like I used to share with you, you must reflect and understand what are virtues. When you understand them, then you put it into practice. And once you put it into practice, you will come to understand the cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path. Actually, Noble Eightfold Path is mainly about developing the right view to cultivate virtue. Then from there, train your mind to have sati, to develop the meditation, the wisdom to liberate your mind. That's why the cultivation comes in three phases: Pariyati, Patipatti, and Pativeda. Then similarly, the whole of meditation, you need to fulfill these three things. You must have your sila, morality. Then only you can go into meditation, which is samadhi. When you develop meditation, samadhi, when you have sati, samadhi, you will be able to see things as they are, to develop the wisdom. That's why panya will come. Then the Buddha also added in dana. These are the essential dhamma: dana, sila, and bhavana. So you look at these two categories of dhamma, you see a lot of similarity. Sila appear in both sides. So sila is a prerequisite for cultivation. Without sila, you cannot go into samadhi. You cannot develop the wisdom. Samadhi and panya constitute bhavana. Understand not? Yeah? You can follow. You need me to write it down. There are some who are new, I think. You may not follow. So I will try to write it down. It's okay. Yeah, it's okay. Dana, sila, bhavana. And the other one is sila, samadhi, panya. They always tell you, sila, samadhi, panya is the Noble Eightfold Path. Remember? Can follow that? That's why the meditation as taught by the Buddha is always this one: Noble Eightfold Path. Sila is morality. Within the Noble Eightfold Path, when you cultivate virtue, like right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, this constitutes morality. Then you develop samadhi, which is right mindfulness and right samadhi. Of course, right effort is part of sila. Right effort to abandon the unwholesome action, speech, and thought that has arisen. Right effort to prevent them from arising when you are skillful. Then right effort to cultivate the virtue and the goodness and the wholesomeness that are still not in you, the appropriate right speech, right action, and right thought, and right livelihood. Then the final right effort is to refine upon and perfect whatever virtue, wholesomeness, goodness, or right action, right speech, and right thought that you have developed, that you have cultivated. That's why it's under sila. Then when it comes to wisdom factor, it's only samadhi. Samadhi, which is right view. But in the book, they always put samadhi, right view, and samasankappa. Correct? You used to read this, isn't it? The first two part factor, they always say, is related to wisdom. But no, as far as my nature understand, it's only right view that is the wisdom factor. Right thought is morality. Without right view, you cannot develop right thought. That's why Noble Eightfold Path, the first part factor is right view. If your views are wrong, what happens? You are conditioned one. When you have wrong view, all your Noble Eightfold Path collapse. Understand not? Wrong view will condition one. Wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood. And all your right effort to cultivate go wrong because you don't have right view. That's why when you don't understand the nature's law that governs life and existence, like law of karma, law of the mind, karma niyama, citta niyama, and dhamma niyama, law of dhamma, or dependent origination, which is the main one. You cannot cultivate, you cannot move. Then the Buddha also mentioned in many places, he said, to develop sila and bhavana, you need the support of dana. Dana is what? What is dana? Generosity. But a lot of people always have this in the mind. I do dana means what? You offer futumang. You think dana is only offer futumang. No. Dana is a parami. It's a paramita, a perfection that you can cultivate. It's generosity. When you are generous, you can offer anything. That's why there is materialistic gift, the gift of life. And the last one is the gift of truth, which they always mention as the highest gift. Dana is an important support because without dana, you will not have the merits. The dana parami, the merits to have wealth. The merits to receive what they call the spiritual teaching. Because when you have generosity, when you make offering in the form of materialistic gift, law karma is such you reap what you sow. So all this will come back to you and it will be very useful as a support for you to cultivate. The four types of happiness that lay people should have. Once you have your means, you can do it. Then the other thing is gift of life. When you give life, you reap what you sow. People will save you, anasana. People will also support you and give you life, like whatever blood donation or organ donation. And as a doctor, you save people. Then as a Dharma practitioner, you give good advice, wisdom, bring people out of suffering, you save people from depression. The gift of truth is such that when you can share and give in this way, in future when you come, you receive the same way. There will be this condition for you to receive them. It's just like this line, my nature I know. A lot of things, the moment I hear the truth, I understand. Sometimes the person that speak, or what they call good, that stands out on the truth, he may not understand. But the moment I hear, I understand. How is this possible? The first time I read the Four Noble Truths, straight away, I went into the essence. I knew what that thing was. And my nature tell me, no need to search. This is the real one. I say, whomsoever 2,000 over years ago can summarize all his understanding into just Four Noble Truths, which is so beautiful, that can summarize all of life, both mundane and supramundane, he must be the real one. Because my nature told me, even if I were to realize that truth, I cannot put it in so beautiful, simple, Four Noble Truths. No way. So that's why the condition can arise is because, just like previous life, this life, the way I share and I give is penetrating. Those who are ready, they receive very fast. They understand very fast. They penetrate very fast. And because of this parami, whenever this form and mind come, this nature come, it will also receive in the same way. Because the way I give, the way this nature give, is the way this form and mind will receive. So, dana, sila, bhavana, if you cultivate dana, that parami is very, very powerful. And all cultivators start from dana. If you don't have dana parami, you cannot cultivate dhamma. That's why you must have love, metta, to radiate love. That is dana, nasana. Gift of love, gift of life, gift of materialistic possession, generosity, gift of truth. Then when you keep your sila, you avoid all evil. You prevent negativity or mental state. The hindrance become less. You can keep them at bay. So when there is sila, your mind state are more conducive for meditation. People who keep their sila will not have restlessness of mind because you will not fear, worry, and have anxiety. Because these are the things that are related to people who violate the precepts. If you don't do that, your mind is more calm, more peaceful. That's why when you chant during the administration of precept, the Buddha always remind the monks. He said, precept or virtue is the source of happiness. Remember? Happiness. Apart from happiness is what? Second one is source of spiritual wealth, true spiritual wealth. Then the last one is what? Source of peacefulness. That's why you need precept to have the peace, the inner peace, leading to the happiness and the joy. Then this is the source of true spiritual wealth. That's why it can help you. Sila can help you in a very, very major way to develop bhavana. So bhavana is these two. When you cultivate the training of the mind to have sati and samadhi, stabilize it, cultivate Noble Eightfold Path to develop the wisdom, the noble qualities of a noble one, and then it becomes bhavana. This is mental training, mental development, mental cultivation. That's why it's called bhavana. So bhavana got two parts. samadhi, then panya. Samadhi is to train your mind to be ever mindful, stabilize it to have the collected and unwavering mind. When you have sati and samadhi, the mind is very clear. There is clarity. It doesn't waver. It doesn't stir. It can see things as they are. That's why it can develop wisdom. It can see things as they are. Jnana dasana. So this is how the Buddha's teaching come about. So when you understand this, you will know how to put emphasis on dana. Put emphasis on sila. That's why do not underestimate all this virtue. Do not underestimate all this parami, especially dana. So now is it clear? A lot of people, I realize, you cannot penetrate the Dhamma because they always think of what? I just have to do vipassana. Straight away go to meditation. You don't even have the base and foundation, like you build a building. Without the base and the foundation, this building can never, never stand up, understand? And you're wasting your time. What are the foundation for Dhamma? Your spiritual faculty, understand? Then, dana parami, sila parami, virtue. When you have this, then you develop the understanding of the essential Dhamma, and this become your foundation. When you understand the essential Dhamma, you will understand the teaching, because they are all related. Then you must have right view to start. So these are all the important pointer, okay? Okay, with that, maybe I will continue with what we did this morning, for the benefit of those who couldn't hear me. Normally, we will bring the mic to the Kuan Yin pond, but this time around, we didn't, because when Suyan asked me, I said, no need. we thought, chant the Vandami Chiti and Sabbam, sure everybody can remember. But I forgot, Kuan Yin pond, really, not easy. Even Yun Chan also told me, say, brother, you speak towards Kuan Yin at the back, how can I hear? Anyway, for the benefit of all those who can hear me, I will now share with you the importance of understanding these two great beings' nature, especially Maitreya Buddha and Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. What I shared with you all this morning was when we were at the stupa, we have to recall to mind the four objects of veneration. Remember? What are they? First one is chetiya. Within the chetiya, the stupa, there will be relics. That's why the second one is relics. Saririke, datu. Then, mahabohing is what? The great bohi tree. The last one is Buddha rupang, sakalasana. Wherever there is this Buddha rupang or image. These are the four objects of veneration. That's why you can recall to mind and pay your respect. Then you have great gratitude towards all these objects of veneration, because they bring forth to mind the great significance of this object. What are the great significance of the stupa? Can some of you tell me? What does the stupa denote apart from the relic and shrine? The base is what? Square. Square. Four number two. Very good. Then after that, you got the four steps. What are they? The four foundation of mindfulness. Understand? That's why they are called foundation of mindfulness. Of course, some textbook use the four arousing of mindfulness. To me, I don't like that word. No. Arouse you. But it depends on how you understand it. you need to be around. Means you are not serious. You are not a real cultivator. Like people around you to have the interest. Foundation of mindfulness is a better word, more appropriate. Then after that, you have the seven factors of enlightenment, remember? Leading upward to Nibbana, to the supramundane, the unconditioned. So those are the great significance of a stupa. That's why all the teaching are coded and enshrined down there, together with the Buddha relic, or relics of virtuous cultivator or monks. Then the second object of veneration is Sarike, all these relics. You know why are the relics object of veneration? What are relics? When you cremate, the leftover of the segmented form of that so-called form and mind, the enlightened being. How come it become relics? Yeah, very good. Because of the purity of that cultivator. You see, when this form and mind connected to the nature develop the wisdom and the understanding, then this form and mind no longer deluded. It will have the wisdom because it's connected. Then no more suffering. Then because of that cultivation, the mundane mind says that it connects to the true mind, then the consciousness transforms, the wisdom energy arises, and this wisdom energy is the embodiment of virtue and wisdom, all of the perfection that they have cultivated and developed. And because this vibration, they are there inside the form for so long. That's why when they parinibbana, you cremate them, their vibration will remain there for a long time. That's why these relics, they are an object of veneration. It's just like you are paying respect to that form and mind when it's around. Well, it symbolizes that wisdom and virtue that it has cultivated. And that vibration, if you are a cultivator, you can feel them. Both the energy. Most people who has already developed the cultivation, they are sensitive to energy. But there are two types. One type is energy field. You do samatha, you do concentration, jhana, or absorption. You are very sensitive to all those, what they call energy field, the very gross type of energy field. But when it comes to wisdom, parami, energy field, those who do that, they could not assimilate, absorb, or draw unless they open up their mind to listen to the Dhamma. Then they develop this understanding and they rejoice. Then they transform within. And then it will tap and receive. But if you got wrong view, if you are stuck in energy field, it's very difficult for wisdom energy field to enter that nature or that form of mind. Those who are the true cultivator of the way, who just develop simple spiritual faculty, they will receive the spiritual teaching and the wisdom energy. That's why you must have right understanding, right view, not to debate, not to have this type of wrong view and conditioning. Like this way place is very good because the stillness energy out there very strong, the stupa, everything. But this place is a good training ground to prepare the mind, to have this stability of calmness, inner peace, inner calmness. then you use it to cultivate, to develop wisdom and panya. And then this place will flourish. This place will actually become beautiful. Wisdom energy is very important. So that's why we have the good condition that Maitreya Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and Sakyamuni Buddha, all their three nature, they are here. This asana is still the Buddha's asana of Sakyamuni. But because of condition that arise, like I explained just now, Maitreya's nature, even though he is the future Buddha, but his nature is already around. Kuan Yin Bodhisattva's nature has been around all the time. That's why, because of my nature's great affinity with all these three nature, at Anandagiri last year, Katina, we are the co-sponsor. We were also very blessed because we were given the opportunity by Ajahn Achalo. Very funny, you know. The project came from nowhere, you know, suddenly it appeared. At first supposed to build only Kuan Yin statue. Then end up, he said, Kuan Yin without Maitreya, not correct. So opposite, he make Maitreya. Then after that, Theravada country, Thailand, don't have Sakyamuni, people will think funny. Theravada monk, don't have Sakyamuni Buddha, got Kuan Yin, got Maitreya. So he decided to put another one in the middle. So we got to consecrate and enshrine all the three. But we were given the special privilege to do the chanting for Kuan Yin. Very funny one. Don't know why people choose us. And out of our group, quite a number, all English educated. They call banana. Don't know Mandarin. But yet we chant Heart Sutta in Mandarin. And we chant the Great Compassion Mantra, Tapicho in Mandarin. Sanskrit. You cannot explain why. Then even here, the first time we came to Sumeru, I remember, somehow the condition arrived because that was before we go Anandagiri. Then suddenly condition arise. Pamasuri asked me, Brother, can we chant Heart Sutta and Tapeso? I said, can. Bring along. Then because Joyce that time around, we were training ourselves to be ready for Anandagiri. Then we did that. Well, after that, the Kuan Yin Pond is totally different. The energy there, the nature there. Then when we are at Cameron Highland Retreat also, many things happen because of the great affinity. Because this life, like I explained just now at the Kuan Yin Pond, I always have great gratitude towards Kuan Yin. And I will thank her profusely for protecting, blessing and guiding my nature life after life for so long. Even this life, like I said, no less than two or three occasions, if it's not because of Kuan Yin's nature, this form of mind will cease long ago. Cannot last until now. That's why this form of mind is very fragile. It can actually get destroyed pretty easily. Because it's just the external form, chemically conditional. If you have this understanding, if you have this affinity, that's why when we go there and pay our respect, offer our puja, do all the chanting, we cultivate affinity. We cultivate devotion, faith. We develop the understanding. Then you must always remember, because Kuan Yin Bodhisattva has great compassion, great loving kindness, and great wisdom. So you should request for the three things that she can, her nature can give to you. You seek her protection, guidance, and her blessing. Protection, you know, protection is for the form and mind, understand? Your nature no need protection, but the form and mind, every time it comes, it need protection. Then guidance is very important. That's why even this life on many occasions. In 1986, all of a sudden, Kuan Yin's nature came. It was so beautiful. She opened out my hand. The moment this lady in white, old lady, it took out the vase and poured the three jewel or the triple gem onto my hand in a line, straight line. I straight away knew that was Kuan Yin. Then he just hold my hand and said, "You have to move fast. Not much time left." That was 1986. From that moment onward, my cultivation became very different. I was dead serious. The book come, the teacher come, the guide come, everything come. And everything happened within that 3 years, 86 to 89. Of course, it continued until 92, because my last guide or last teacher manifest around 92, I think. 91 or 92, I think. I met him, if I'm not wrong, 1990, I think. At that time, actually, I don't need teacher. I don't need anybody. I already understood the Dhamma. But the last guy was a very special case because of my vow. Then after that, very funny, you know, 1989, for almost 15 years, this nature never do anything. Because nobody knew, nobody understood. And what it had understood is the complete opposite of what the world do or did. Just like all the sharing and the cultivation I have been explaining to you. Last time you all taught those who meditation, those who vipassana. But when I understood, I realized they were not. These are thought-based meditation. Can never liberate you. Can never bring forth the understanding and the teaching. But there are some who from thought-based meditation later on shift on to awareness-based meditation. These are the people who can penetrate. It doesn't mean nobody penetrate God. But these are the people who realize towards the end that they have to stop the labeling. They have to just completely silence the mind and develop the wisdom, the right understanding, the right view. So this part is very important. Then after that, 2004, that was the year the great tsunami, you remember? Yeah? Christmas time, near Christmas or Christmas time, the great tsunami of Asia. Boxing Day. That time, you all should thank Yun Chan. She located me and asked me to come out to share. She requested 3 times. All the 3 times, I said, no, it's okay, I say, got condition, then only it come out. Then after the 3rd time when I say no, that night very strange. Suddenly the nature say, "Hey, it's time for you to come out and share. Condition has fallen into place." Then deep inside it doesn't want, because out of love and compassion for those who may not understand, karmic repercussion can happen. So this nature has to reflect and develop some understanding. And then it came out with 3 conditions. That's why I call back Yun Chan. I say, with these 3 conditions, I agree. Then we come out. We call it a Dhamma discussion. We don't call it a Dhamma talk. I always call it Dhamma sharing. That's how all these things happen. Then after I came out to share, last year was the 10th year. That's why we had our anniversary, our gathering of Kayamita that coincide with this former mind's birthday. Then the year 2008, very funny. Maitreya's nature came and requested me to share the true Dhamma in Mandarin. You know. And very funny, you know, the whole incident happened. That whole statue animated into a live one. Then the moment it animated, it started to laugh. You know. That type of laughter, you know, is Maitreya one. Laughter, ha ha ha, very loud. Then after that, from the mouth, the golden words come out, you know, one by one, you know, in a straight line. 请你把正法传下去, repeated for 5 times. The golden word, non-stop. Come on, with the laughter in the background. The first time when it was recited, I knew it was Maitreya. Then deep inside, I told myself, you are the Sama Sambuddha, you don't have to request. You just instruct, this nature will do. Oh. That's why that was how it happened. That's why I came to know this era, Kuan Yin nature and Maitreya's nature, they are around, they are very powerful. Even in Anandagiri, you can ask those who follow me that spiritual trip. So many things happened when we were doing the chanting and all those things. The night before the rehearsal, already a lot of things happened. Then that day, again, weather very good, beautiful. Then the photo that they took. But the Cantina celebration was really, really very different. The nature, the energy, everything fall into place. And the photo that came out also very strange. Achalo got it forward to us. We also didn't know until we received them. But it's not so much of all those things. It's more of what happened on those days. Your nature can feel and you know that is what is happening. Their nature are so powerful and there was so much joy. Then the Dhamma protectors, the devas, all those that partake and help out in promoting the sasana or maintaining the sasana. Protecting the dispensation of Sakyamuni. They were all there, so beautiful. So similarly, when we are here, we have this affinity, that's why we make offering, we rejoice. And all these are from Kayanimitta Fund, they reimburse from Kayanimitta Fund. So don't have the wrong idea, why they don't let me know, I cannot partake. Understand? You should rejoice because people has developed that condition and of affinity for all to partake. That's why I pull all the donation together and Kayanimitta Fund partake in the pool and the donation. Everything is planned according to understanding. That's why I set up the Kayanimitta Fund. It's mainly to help Kayanimitta to move, to receive all the condition for you all to move. There are certain things that only Kayanimitta Fund can do. Like all of my sharing, the printing of the books and all those material, even the whiteboard we buy for my class sharing, the pen and all those things. They are all from Kayanimitta Fund only. Even if you got money, you cannot partake because it's meant for Kayanimitta Fund. So all this, when you start to develop the understanding, you should have the joy. You should rejoice and you should thank your lucky star for having this condition. So these are the few things that I spoke just now there. That's why I say you must pay respect to Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, Lord Maitreya. Then recall to mind their great wisdom, virtue and perfection. Then seek their guidance, seek their protection and their blessings. Blessings are very important. The moment they bless you, you will benefit in a great way. Like we used to say in Cantonese, you fat tat liao. Because that nature, when it bless you, is very potent and very powerful. Like what happened in Cameron, remember? That day, Om Pe Mi 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 Hum, through Joyce. Then before that also, Viruchana Buddha, that nature. Actually, Cameron Highland there. All the Mahayana great beings, their nature are all there. Pusian, Vensu, Tizang Wang Pusa, Wang Suying Pusa, even Vito, Dharma Protector. Mi Lo Pho, the one in front. And Viruchana is the original Sama Sambuddha, the whole lineage that goes back to the first one. That's why it's all connected. So this is what I shared this morning. Then the four objects of veneration, I already explained it. The Bodhi tree was because the Buddha under the great Bodhi tree, after his enlightenment, he has a lot of gratitude. We initiated him and bring about the condition. And all of the Buddha Rupang is for you to recall to mind the great virtue and wisdom of Lord Buddha, so that when you reflect and contemplate on the Buddha, you can develop the very strong faith. Then when it drives you to cultivate, virya will arise. Then when you develop sati, you can put to test all of his teaching. Then when it stands up to investigation, there is so much joy, your faith becomes unshakable. That's how from there, virya is strengthened, sati also become unshakable. Then all the spiritual faculty become unshakable, become powers. That's how the enlightenment factors, one by one, they fall into play, pop, 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 pop. Then you develop equanimity of mind through wisdom. So these are all the essential dhamma that you should develop. You should understand and make full use of it to develop the cultivation. Okay, what's the time now? Oh, 10:10, we still got time. Okay, now maybe we open up for Q&A. You got any question or meditation reporting? Anybody? Where is the mic? Anybody wants to ask any question or report? Ah, there, at the back. Pass it over.
Good morning, Prasthu. If the mind is not silent yet, how do we contemplate and how should we contemplate? Thanks, Sadhu.
Okay, thank you so much for the question, Brother Chin-Hao. It's a good question. You see, if your mind is not silent yet, the question is, he wants to know how do we contemplate. Contemplation can be done when you are not silent yet. Contemplation is reflection, inquiry. But you should do it under certain creative mind state, so that contemplation can be effective. Creative mind state means what? Just like I used to share with you all. If you are a musician, or if you are a very talented poet, when are you most creative? When are you most creative? When you are alone in a very quiet setting, when nobody disturbs you, where you like the vibration, everything, like in retreat, or Cameron Highland, or even Sumeru, or what. At the stupa this morning, it was so quiet in there. But of course, the chirping of the birds and the vibration, they were very, very, what they call, clear. But within the background, there is this stillness. there is silence. So you can silence your mind and meditate. Then you can tap those energy. Then the shift of consciousness can come. Then when you are silent, all of this chipping and vibration become very clear. There's clarity. Then if you come out of the formal meditation, you just look at nature, reflect. Then every moment of perception, the mind can develop the contemplative wisdom. Everything you come to see or perceive, you can develop the contemplative wisdom. What you need is only the stimulant. The stimulant is in the form of inquiry. That's why you must recall to mind the Four Noble Truths. Then the second turning, then you inquire, why did the Buddha say that? How can I develop the understanding? Then from all this inquiry, you can go into the reflection. What does the Buddha mean when he said birth is suffering, old age sickness and death is suffering? When you throw out this inquiry to reflect, the creative mind will have a stimulant or a inquiry to direct it, understand? Then it will recall to mind, recollect what happened at birth. Then as you go through with mindfulness, the creative recollection of that memory of birth, then suddenly if there is Dhamma, you will realize it. You will understand it. No wonder the Buddha say birth is suffering. But all this while, you never pay attention to this reality of life and existence. You take for granted. All birth, born ready or not, boy or girl. You only interested in this. You never even inquire, how was it, your wife? Was it difficult delivery? Any situation that you go through or not? What did the doctor say? You don't have any concern. You only interested in boy or girl. When is the full moon? That's why, like Dhamma cultivation, you never have attentiveness or awareness of the essential Dhamma, like the five hindrances, the five aggregates of form and mind, the three evil roots. All this you never pay attention. You're only interested in what? The dollar sign, money. Oh, how can I get a promotion? When is my next promotion? Which is a better job with better pay? What type of wife should I look for? Like that day, my classmate on the website, they put these two characters, tennis player, one male and one female. The male one is this. What is his name right here? He was a world champion for many times after Bjorn Borg. His face very serious. Arada, yeah. You know how he was playing. Then suddenly from the crowd, the lady shouted, will you marry me? You know, man's reaction is what? Smile. Oh, then he continued to play. Then when it comes to Steffi Graf. When she play also, the man shout, will you marry me? She different now. She look out. How much money do you have? He very seesaw. So he said, this classmate of mine, man and woman, the difference is there. Men don't ask for money. Men got money. Woman ask how much money you have before you even throw that word out. The wife all objected. All the female classmate objected. He said, where got that one? These are tennis players. So when you look at Dhamma cultivation, you look at how you live your life, sometimes you can develop the wisdom and the understanding. Because human beings' problem is, cultivators' problem is, we never pay attention to life. We never pay attention to Dhamma. We are more interested in all the petty things in the form of reward, in the form of benefit. And all these are part of the evil root of greed, selfishness. Seldom do you have this clear mind that can allow you to develop all this understanding. So coming back to the question, when our mind is not silent, how do we do the reflection and contemplation or inquiry? It can be done. Second, turning of the Four Noble Truths, true. No need to have silent mind. You must have a creative mind in a tranquil setting. Sometimes when you're alone at home, you can reflect. I used to reflect during the early days. And my teacher always advised me, Achayandra, we choose reflect on all the Noble Truths, all the essential Dhamma, until very, very clear. He always used this word, until very, very clear. Oh, that one really, really very profound. And that was the second turning. And I didn't know it was the second turning until much later when Yun Chan asked me to come out to share. But after that, initially it was general topic about tsunami and all that. Then later on, somebody suggested, why not we get Brother Teo to share the Dhamma? I said, can, no problem. Then they say, when shall we start? Then they fix a date. Then they say, what topic? That time, I also don't know what topic. Then I look at the wall. We were at Vipassana Society, I think, Kanan there, the section 17. Then on the wall, there is this five ascetic, together with the Buddha, the first sermon. That's why I say, we start this one. Dhamma Cakkappavattana Sutta, where the Buddha also start with this. Then after that, I asked Yun Chan, I say, you got any book on that explain about the Dhamma Cakkappavattana Sutta? I haven't read the Sutta. I don't even know what was in it. I only know it was the first sermon. I only know a little bit of avoid the two extremes. Then the rest I never read. Well, I don't have a sutta all along. I only heard bits and pieces from Reverend Suvanno and Chief Reverend and all that. Then Yun Chan, very smart, he said, yeah, but I got one book for you, the Thai chanting book. He passed it to me. Then when I took home and read, I got a shock. I said, all the teaching are there. The first turning, second turning, third turning. The moment I read, I understand. But it was never really emphasized in the Theravada tradition. Seldom taught, seldom explained. Then the translation run a bit also, I know. That's how when I read that one, then I knew the second turning is reflection and contemplative wisdom, born of inquiry, Chintamaya Panya. That's why I can relate to the three types of wisdom which nobody has related until now. Then I recall what I did and what my teacher Achayandra told me. Actually, all along I have been cultivating this second turning of the Four Noble Truths without knowing that it was the second turning of the Four Noble Truths. Well, I reflect deep into all this Dhamma until very, very clear. Even later on when I went to Japan, spiritual trip to help somebody, there the nature is very beautiful. The vibration there, the condition, very, very conducive. So we were staying in this, what they call Soja. Soja is their monastery. Very nicely built. So this group of Buddhists, they are different. They are the Japanese, they call it what? Happiness, happy sign, signs of happiness, something like that. But the teacher is very famous, Yoko Okawa, I think Okawa, I forgot the name. He was a very famous teacher. But the soja there, the energy is very different, very, very different. The higher being type of what they call pure energy, the one that I receive later on. Then when I was there, I can feel. Then I can connect. Then I can actually tap and go in. But it's only in those soja that they build. That's why their teaching, they say, if you want to do all those samadhi, or energy field, you can only do in the soja. You do out of the soja, the master say he is not responsible for your problem. At first I didn't know, because those few people asked me to help from Malaysia. Their wives, they are very staunch in that Japanese Buddhism. Then he wants me to find out and explain to him whether that was a correct Buddhism or not. Because he know, this classmate of mine know, we are Buddhist society together in the university days, University of Malaya. So he talked to me a long time before the trip, passed me some book. Actually, he wanted to marry the girl who is in that sect. Oh, so he was worried. So I also didn't know. So I thought, okay, help you to find out, we go. Then I read the teaching. Then I went there. I say everything about the Noble Eightfold Path is the same, except one path factor, very different. They don't have samasati. Their samasati is different. They call it prayer. They actually contact the higher being. Then they mix with Christianity, and all that thing. I say all the other Noble Eightfold Path are very good. The right view, everything is very good. Except samasati. I say this one, they don't use sati to go in. They go in through prayer, through concentration, through energy field. Then these two wives, after the feedback, panic because they started with Theravada Buddhism also. Then they don't believe. They never believe that they can be wrong. So you know what happened? They go and check with their master, their sifu. So this person, Imai Sang, who was in charge of them, listened to them. Then this Imai Sang go and check with the Master Ogawa. Oh, luckily the Master Ogawa told him, he said, that person who told you one is right, correct, is it? That's why I say you must do in the soja. You cannot do outside soja. He's not responsible for you. The teacher told him. Then after that, the Imai Sang very good. Oh, he came and talked to me. He said, Mr. Teo, he said, hopefully, you can talk to them, not to worry. Because they're full of fear now. Yeah, in my son confirm I was right. He said, don't worry. He said, finally, it's the same, when you understand. Then I say, yeah, no harm. Noble Eightfold Path, seven path factor, all the same. The last one you do in soja, you go like that, okay, protected. Because they have this pure energy to protect you from deviation so that the non-human will not come and disturb you and condition you into negativity and all the same. So that was how all this happened. Then when I was there, what I want to tell you was very funny, I was able to actually reflect and contemplate, because the nature there was so different, so beautiful. Then that time, I expanded on the Noble Eightfold Path, just because of the condition there. Then I start to understand the very deep, profound Noble Eightfold Path. And that time, the Dhamma keep on arising, because my inquiry is very simple. How can I let the living being understand? Then, keep on coming out. That's why after that, I did make a note. of what happened there. But it's also on a rough paper, one sheet of rough paper. I remember we attended this Japanese Buddhism. They got this Noble Eightfold Path seminar. No? They use Noble Eightfold Path to solve your depression and psychiatric problem. No? And it worked. A lot of people in Japan recover. That's why they respect him like mad. And they paid. No, it's not cheap, I tell you. One of the costs can be a few $1,000 on you attend. But they are a lot money on. Then you can ask them to help you to like do the blessing and chanting. You donate, you pay. Then they do for you. Then they come and ask me, Dhamma got like that one. I say, I don't know. You change. Yeah, I say, different people do different things. Well, I cannot comment because they have their reason and they have their maybe way of doing things. So different people, different. So if you want to understand, you have to develop your own cultivation and your own understanding. So there were many of this encounter that I came across, but they were all beautiful in their own way, because this particular psych also helped many people out of suffering. So I answered your question. Okay, now maybe I go quick into the balance of Heart Sutta. I haven't finished last night. Okay. You turn to page 3, Yesterday we stopped at page 3, Meditation and important essential Dhamma. So the important essential Dhamma are the 5 mental hindrances that hinders the mind from becoming peaceful and aware within. They are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, or sleepiness and lethargic mind, restlessness of mind, and doubt. We are reading from part 2. Can follow? To counter it, we need to cultivate the opposite 5 spiritual faculty. The opposite 5 spiritual faculty are Sadda, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. The English translation are in inverted comma. Then the other essential Dhamma is a 5 daily contemplation, leading to initial wisdom so that you can move. Shall we read this together? This body of ours is of the nature to grow old and decay, for it has not gone beyond old age and decay. Now coming back to Brother Chin Hao, when you reflect and contemplate every day, how do you do it? When you recite this, how do you do? Not visualize. This body of ours, you need to be aware that of this body, understand? Then, it's of the nature to grow old and decay. You investigate into it, true or not? Since birth until now, constantly growing old, decaying. It has never become more young or forever young. No matter how beautiful you maintain, how well you put the ICI, as you age, Botox also say, as you age, maybe the surface you can do like the car respray, but inside wear and tear, out of shape already, long already. You need complete overhaul. Car you can overhaul, got spare part. This one not many spare part. This one all the spare part also you have to wait for people to donate. And this spare part is not like car, very easy to change. Take out, fit in nicely, they can test run. This one put on the surgery bench. They cut you open, especially heart transplant. it's a very difficult process, even kidney transplant. But later on, maybe technology more advanced, no need to own the surgery bench. They just energize, then completely new one come out. Technology can make this a possibility. You don't laugh because we are not in that civilization yet. But this problem in mind is not for you to understand until later on. We may think our present civilization very advanced, and I can tell you, we are actually still very primitive compared to those advanced civilization who has gone beyond. But compared to our old civilization, the last 40 years or 30 over years, we have progressed and advanced tremendously. You agree or not? Just imagine, the last few thousand years, we were still so backward, even during the 60s and the 70s. But from the 80s onward, last 30 over years, we progressed so far. We understand the universe so differently. Last time they still believe in God, Earth is the center of the universe. Then they put all those smart people into jail. Copernicus, Socrates, all these people, they say, because they contradict the church, they cannot accept. They put them into jail. So when you reflect, you check, this is the truth. Or it's not gone beyond. Then you ask yourself, why is it this way? Because this body, when we reflect, is only element, no knowing. Cannot be us. So what is element? Condition arising. It will be subject to nature's law, wear and tear, and so on. It goes the way of nature. That's why these are reality. Old age, sickness and death. These are the reality of this form. Do not be deluded by it. Otherwise, when you attach via your delusion, what happens? You fear that this body you think which is you. There is fear of getting old, getting sick and die. Where you think you get old, you get sick and you die. That's why the Buddha say you must reflect before you confront them. Otherwise, delusion will cause you to grasp, cling, attach, and suffering will be the result. That's why the second reflection is this body of ours is of the nature to be diseased and get sick, for it has not gone beyond disease and sickness. Then we reflect the third one together. This body of ours is of the nature to die, for it has not gone beyond death. True or not? Death is a certainty, understand? Finally, everything dies, but there is no real death. When you understand nothing dies, who dies? You die. That form of mind is not you. Form of mind cannot die. Why? Because it's condition arising. When condition cease to be, consciousness leaves the body separate. And because they separate, no more condition, that's why the form am I? No more. Erase. Don't exist anymore. And you say die. Because you deludedly believe this so-called human being, the form am I, is you. They are condition arising. Also phenomenal. When condition is there to support its existence, then it like real exists. What are the three conditions that support this form of mind? That animate it into like a living reality. What are they? What are the three conditions? Karmic force or life force that pump your heart. Then you must have a physical body that is still in working order, like the car, in working order. That's why the driver can drive the car. Otherwise, any organ breakdown, the conscience cannot stay. It also has to leave. Then there must be a consciousness since birth. So all these are the three conditions that support the continual sustainer of this five aggregate of form and mind, this human body, and the consciousness that are born and trapped in this form since young until now, develop all of the conditioning and the bundles of memory, views and opinion and the conditioning. And this is the one that mold you. That's why they call it your character. So you are what you are because of this bundle of memory, the views, the opinion and the conditioning. The moment the brain is damaged, you lost your identity, you forgot who you are. It has happened before to many of these stroke patients and accident patients. So in truth, you have to reflect, who are you, what are you? When you understand all these conditions arising, then you do not foolishly and deludedly cling and hold. Then like the Buddha explained under Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, this form, is it satisfactory? Yeah? It's never satisfactory then. Why? Because it's condition arising. Either lead to old age, sickness and death. Either decay. Either go the way of nature. That's why it's not satisfactory. You cannot rely on it. That's why you don't hold, don't attach, don't cling, don't deludedly grasp. Similarly, feeling. Feeling, is it satisfactory? Because it's impermanent, that's why it's unsatisfactory. One moment happy, next moment can be miserable. Then feeling, is it you? Is it right to call you and me? Why no? Because feeling come and go, anasana. This moment, good feeling. Next moment, negative feeling. Good feeling come and go, you didn't die, anasana. That's why feeling cannot be you. The aggregate cannot be you. If they are not you, then why do they arise in you? All this, slowly, slowly, when you reflect and contemplate, then you realize the universal characteristics of impermanent will lead you to the understanding that you cannot cling, you cannot grasp, you cannot hold, because it goes the way of nature. It will change, it will transform. You want it forever young, not get sick and don't die, it cannot. That's why suffering will arise when you attach and cling and want things your way. And because it's impermanent, that's why it's non-self. It's empty, no reality. Just a phenomenal world of consciousness, come and go, condition arising, arising and pass away, moment to moment. Your thought, your aggregate of mind, even your physical body, every moment, every instant is changing, transforming. Every cells within your physical, every moment, every instant, they are changing, transforming, evolving. Every moment within this form and mind, your feeling change, your perception change, your consciousness change, your activity of mind change. Then you can feel the vibration within, the heartbeat come and go, arise and pass away, the pulse of life within your bloodstream when it flows. It rise and fall, it arise and pass away. Then all the sensation, tactile, come and go. Then all perception, come and go, constantly, continuously. That's why you start to see this reality. Then when you contemplate, then you will come to know the body, which is the physical, can never be you, because only element. Then after that, we go to the fourth contemplation. About separation. Ah, yes. Ah, yeah.
Radio. Whenever I contemplate on this third contemplation, daily contemplation on death, One day, all of us, or me, must die.
Yeah.
And then, like just now, Brother was mentioning, it's best that we just know whatever phenomena come to our mind, just come and go, come and go.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
the face of, in the time of facing death.
Yeah.
Is this we needed to be? We need to do during that.
Oh, okay. Past, thanks. Good.
That we know that deep inside our heart, or
I know
we are going to pass away.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this what we, if in our control?
Okay.
Can we do this?
Yeah, I will answer your question. Very good question. Thank you, Amy. You see, because she has contemplated, she has developed the understanding that there is no reality within this 5 years of form and mind. Everything is just like that. Yeah. That happened to me when I was in that place is what? Himapeng, I think. What Himapeng, if I'm not wrong. That time, I was there with my wife and some Dhamma friend. Then we met this Mrs. Uyi and Mr. Uyi. I think some of you may know them. They are very old Buddhist couple. Then Mr. Uyi has passed away. Then the wife came to Wu Ping Jing Sir to attend my class. Where he recalled those days when he met me with the husband, and the husband respect me a lot. He always talk about me. You see, during that time, Long Po Tet, the famous monk in Thailand, he was 94 years old already. And that time we were able to meet him was because he got one nephew, Prakhu, whom I came to know while he was in Brickfield. Then because I helped him, he has a lot of gratitude, and he liked me. So there was one trip I went to Thailand, Bangkok. One Meiji is supposed to take us around. Suddenly he told me, the Meiji said, "Hey, Prakhu is here." Oh, I said, "I know him." Then I said, "Can we call him?" He said, "Yeah, she got the number, I call him." The moment he received my call, wow, he's so happy. He said, "Where are you going?" So I say, "We haven't really planned. We intend to be around for about 9 days. He said, "I take you around." So he came over. So we hired the van and we went. Well, that trip was so wonderful. Even the driver was so amazed. All those great monks, which we find, the Thai people find it so difficult to meet. That trip we not only met. We went in to his private kuti to have an audience with him. Long Po Tet. He was very sick at the time actually. They told us he will not see anybody. But because of the nephew there, we managed to get an appointment with him and an audience with him. Then he got one disciple, very good. This disciple. Because at that time, 1988 or what, I forgot already. My mind hasn't really gone through the full cessation. So that time I already understood the Dhamma, the impermanent, like what Engbi realized. Everything is just condition arising, cause of phenomena, come and go, no reality. Then I emphasize on daily mindfulness and all those things. Then that time, I think there were two ladies from Alastar, from Malaysia. They were the traditional Vipassana, Burmese traditional. But I was told they were sent there on the advice of their teacher to learn from this Long Po Tet. And when they were there, I met one of them. Then, because this lady was together with that chief disciple, and this chief disciple, I think he has the Dhamma. He can feel. I can feel him, he can feel me. And he full of joy when he saw me. Then somehow he created the condition for us to talk. No? In the midst of nowhere, in the open, suddenly 5 of us sat down there. Then he started to ask, no, how you all do your cultivation? One by one. No? Then when he come to me, I just told him what I do, daily mindfulness and all those things. At the end of the day, when he finished asking, he tell that lady from Malaysia, you know, he said, he point to me, he said, that one is the true one, he said, that one is the real one. They cannot understand. No. Then after he gave me one advice, no, very good advice. No. At that time when I heard, I knew already, but I still haven't penetrated. He finally told me, just one advice, even that nama rupa, that form and mind, that come and go, finally cease to be. Wow, I straight away sadhu him. I say sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Even though I may not have gone into it fully, but the glimpse of it allow me to understand that that is the final outcome. So that's why after that, I realized that chief disciple was very good, and he's not controversial. No. Later on, he didn't even take over. No. I think he left, and he went off somewhere. I forgot his name. He was a very good monk, a very, very good monk. So those who are true cultivator, they will know. Then before we left, we say goodbye to those Malaysian people, then the lady. Then I say, sadhu, I say, I rejoice, you are very wholesome, came for so long. I think they went for 3 or 6 months. He said, no, brother, sadhu to you. He said, Achan say, you, the real one. They say, the true cultivator. So, that was so long ago. So what I want to explain is, what Engbi reflected and contemplate. You don't worry, not long, the cessation will come. You have actually penetrated the mental fire aggregate of formula. You can see because you can lie down and silence your mind. You have clarity of its arising and passing away. You can equate it to certain jnana under the 16 stages. Where you can see very clearly now. By end of the day, don't have to worry about when you're about to die, should you keep and maintain this type of contemplation? No, forget about it. As you cultivate, you will go through the cessation. Then you will understand, you will know how to die. No need to worry about that. Because nothing dies. Who dies? The thought cannot die. Consciousness is energy. Energy cannot die. That's why that one, for normal people who take rebirth, the rebirth consciousness, that one come out as random of consciousness, understand? But for the enlightened being, that one don't come out. The whole thing cease. That's why cessation I form my mind. That's why they call parinibbana. It just cease. Like the Buddha said, the candle at the back, you blow it off. What happens? Where did the flame go? Where did the flame go? It just disappeared. It's the unconditioned. How can the unconditioned arise through condition? No, it just ceased. And you understand what? The reason why I can tell you is because when I was young, when I don't have the Dhamma, this form of mind already know how to die. It know how to be aware of the how the craving force detached from this body, then how the whole thing come out. That time it can come out because it has not gone into cessation, understand? Actually it died, you know. Then it come out. But not time yet, that's why it has to go in again. So all this, as a cultivator, you will come to know. That's why the Dhamma is pachetang, can be realized in the here and the now, and you will understand. It's not a theory or a guesswork. That's why the silent mind that goes through the cultivation will understand, and you will know what death is. Nothing die, no one die. And that nature never born, so how to die? Things that are never born will never die. That's why in the Heart Sutta, in true emptiness, there is no birth, no old age, no sickness and death. Understand? Beyond all this are the conditioned world. Within the unconditioned, There is no Four Noble Truths, no Dhamma, nothing. That's why the penetrative wisdom, you have to understand both sides. Then when you come from both directions, you will know how to live using this form and mind. You will have the understanding of the conditioned world, then you know this form and mind has to abide by karma. You have a duty. There are still things to do, even though it's empty, impermanent, not real one. But there is such thing as life. There is such thing as karma. There is such thing as relationship, because form and mind subject to karma recognizes relationship. But ultimate truth, he know you, he know me. No one born, no one die, no one sick. That's why it will not attach, it will not cling. But it know it has a duty to do. It will know how to live. That's why it's so complicated. Human being cannot understand. Very complicated. One side, brother, Lord Buddha say anatta, non-self, empty. Next side, you are born of your karma, here to your karma condition, and so on. You are what you are because of karma. Then who is that you? That's why you don't understand. That ones refer to your five aggregate of form and mind. It was never you. But the Buddha say you, born of your karma. Yeah, that five aggregate of form and mind. You think that is you. That is delusion. But within the conditioned world, within the law of karma, that one holds. Understand? The form and mind is subject to that. There is a reality behind. That's why if you don't have the true penetrative understanding, it's like contradictory. You cannot reconcile. So simple a Dhamma like yesterday also, you get confused. This one, you more confused. Yesterday, you cannot even differentiate between feeling and thought. Both are conditioned Dhamma. This one, conditioned and unconditioned, you lucky confused. Understand? That's why Dhamma is not what you think. Whatever the world think, because it's logical. But the truth is always the opposite, the reverse of it. Okay, English, sadhu, and rejoice. Then the fourth one, this one we recite together. All that is dear to us, our loved ones, our wealth, our possession, etc., are impermanent, and they are all conditioned arising. Hence, they will separate from us one day. Whatever that is of the nature to arise from condition is of the nature to cease, correct or not? When condition cease to be, it will cease to be. Just like my voice, my vibration. What are the conditions for its arising? There is a microphone system. There is electricity. As long as I speak, the vibration is there. Your hearing, you can pick it up through your hearing consciousness, then it rises, real. That's why hearing consciousness is condition arising, no reality, the Buddha said. The moment I stop, what happened? It ceases to be. But you never say sound die, you know. That's not. It did already. Why? Because this phenomena is so short, understand not? Ephemeral. That's why there are certain phenomena that last longer, like your form and mind. And this phenomena lasts so much longer. Maybe 75 years old, 80 years old, you are lucky. Then, to you, it's like real. You know? Well, I have been carrying this form and mind for so long, why you say not me? Understand not? Yeah, it's supported, the condition still there. But when condition cease to be, it cease to be. Whatever that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease, because they are all supported by condition. When condition cease to be, cease to be. So our life force, the condition that supported this human form, is similar to a candle. What do you need to light up the candle? You need the wax in it. You need the wick in it. Then you need a light to light in it. Let's say your candle is so long. Does it guarantee that this light will last the whole length of this candle? Never guarantee that. That's why I say this form of mind is very fragile, like a candle. Down come the wind, gone. No wind also, people blow also gone. Then sometimes no wind, nobody blow. Burn, halfway got defect. Check, also die. Also no more. Your manufacturing error. DNA problem. That's why there is no guarantee that your candle so long, you will live so long. Whatever there is condition arising, there is no guarantee. So all this, your loved one, your prized possession, your wealth, or whatever you think you own, you hold on to dearly, they are all condition arising, causal phenomena. They never really belong to anybody. When society's law recognize, then temporarily it's like you own, like you say, my son, my children, my wealth, my spouse, my loved one. You think you own them. The Buddha say, even this very body, you cannot own your own body. Then wherein son, wherein wealth, wherein all this possession. But this one is also condition arising, never you. There is no real ownership. There is only temporary. When condition is such, like you own, like your wealth and all those things. But when condition cease to be, what happens? You make a mistake, currency crisis. Then you lost them. No more condition for you to own. Then wipe you off. Your property all confiscated. Or through mortgage, it get for sale. Your business, everything, you're in crisis, gone. Then sometimes, condition is such, when they are still doing very well, but suddenly your breath stop. What happened? When your breath stop, your identity erased, cannot own. Also, they separate from you. But you say, no, but I got a will. I still own. But what is will? You will do somebody else. Never yours. So like the joke, they always bring this joke up. Because the Christian believe in eternal heaven. Your money is in the bank. When you die, because you believe, you aspire to go to eternal heaven. So when you die, you say, 人在天堂. Because you want to go eternal heaven, so you are in heaven. But your money is in the bank. And there is a pun, because 天堂 and 银行, like a pun. So that's why the Buddha very wise. So if you think you own, make full use of it while you still can. That's why Dhanaparami. Otherwise, 人在天堂, 钱在银行. And there's another good saying, I think this one I must share with you. Money in the bank, never use, is not your money. And there are many ways to use your money. You can use it for Dhanaparami, for the good of the money. This is very wholesome. But if you are a miser, if you are very good, what do you do with your money? You never want to share, you never want to give, you don't even want to donate. No. You keep on keeping in the bank. No. Then I got this friend, we used to joke. He said there are many ways to use the money. If I were you, when I still can move around, they call in Cantonese, sang ngao ngao hoi zao, use the money. While you can still walk, run, and go about. Like Brother Suyan always say, when she met Claire, Claire's advice is, while you can still physically move, you better travel and live life or enjoy life. Then the other way is, when you are sick, disease, bedridden or stroke, then you land in the hospital. You still use money, you know, but fun tai le yong. You still use money, but in a lying down posture in the hospital. Oh, and there is big money here. Jing Yap says 7-star. The consultancy fee, also the doctor one, also 7-star. So they just morning walk around, you know, and ask you, how are you? Okay. Already the bill you see next morning. Doctor consultancy fee. So all this, you have to bear in mind. You can use appropriately, then you use. But don't go and say, hey, brother, you say use, oh, then I got no more money to retire. Oh, then you come and blame me. Oh. Brother, you say use. Oh. I don't want to fun tie like you. I want to kay, check, check. Then you go and simply squander your money. Oh. It's not like that. That's why you have to plan your life. You have to plan your retirement. But don't be too conservative. Don't be like a lot of people. I still cannot afford to retire. I still cannot afford what they call not to work. That's why I give this talk. I like that topic, understanding life. Its purpose and intent. I always give this talk. In Klang, I give twice, I think. So all this understanding is about understanding life. Understand? While you have the means and the condition, you can divide your life into three phases. Average life spans 75. Correct? Not? First 25 years, what you do? You grew up as a student, you study and graduate from the uni. Now maybe earlier, 2021. That is your first phase of life. Study. Play. Second phase is what? Come out to society, get a job, work. Then last phase, you're supposed to retire. But human beings' problem is, they work and work and work, they never get the time to retire. Because they always say, wait till I retire, I go full time into Dhamma. But they never retire. Every time they say, cannot lah. That's why I always say, you need to work, you work. You have to work, no choice, you work. But you have a choice, why not be realistic? How much do you really need to survive? You don't need much. Make sure you are free of debt. Then to sustain your simple life, you don't need that much money. But it will be good if you know how to have some investment that can keep the cash flow coming so that you can do dana parami. So investment can be in many forms, but you must develop right understanding. Otherwise, not easy in this financial world. You can lose money. And a lot of people who are not good in investment, they lost money. So, like Dhamma, you need understanding. When you understand, you know how to do. So all this is what life is all about. So when you are young, you have a lot of energy, a lot of time, but you got no money. Then as you work, you make a lot of money. You got a lot of energy. You got no time. The last phase, a lot of money, a lot of time. No more energy. That's why the three phases is very fair. So they used to draw this cartoon on the WhatsApp. They send it to you. The beautiful young lady. He looked at the old man. How nice if I can have his money. Then the old man looked. How nice if I can have his young form. Then the kid looked. He said, how nice if I can both the young form and the money. But the trouble is, when you are young, you got no money. So you haven't come out to work yet. So that's why in order to solve your so-called dilemma or what, if you cannot do it in your generation, you make sure your next generation can do it. That's why I told my children differently. I said, if you don't mind, I said, because the house is already there, the car is already there for you, because you didn't go overseas, so then the seed money is for you. Because you didn't go overseas, I save a lot of money. This is for you to start off your life. and you can do what you want. You don't have to wait till 15 years later or 40 years old to work so hard for money, to be financially independent as well, to own a proper house. Actually, to own a house and a car and to develop your financial freedom, you spend a lot of time and you really work for it. So for me, I told them, you don't have to go through that phase, because simple life, these are the things that are already there. You don't need to work towards it. You live your life straight away. Do what you want to do. So that is how you can help them. And law of karma is what? You reap what you sow. No? In future, when you come, you will have parents who will take care of you and do this to you. No? Actually, this life, I also more or less have that chance. But I choose not to use it. When I went to the uni, my father, he loved me so much. He know I'm one of the 9 that can study very well, and I bring forth a lot of joy and happiness to him and the family, because like bring honor back to the family. Yeah, I was the first in that remote small town. That managed to actually not only get into University Malaya, but study engineering. Then it was like a very rare thing to happen that time in my hometown. Then my father keep on telling me, you go and buy a car, you go and buy a house. I said, no, because there are 7 more children, you have to finance them. That's why I didn't want. Even though I have the condition. But for me, the condition like that, civilization like that, for my nature, first generation kid, I like to build up things on my own. And then later I supported my brother. Then a lot of things, whenever they got problem or what, they call me and I resolve it straight away. That's why our family is like very blessed. There's no problem. Every year, New Year, we go back, we resolve problem. And seldom we got any problem, despite such a big family. That's why when you have Dhamma, when you have the understanding, your life become very beautiful, very unique. Okay, we have to move on. What's the time? Oh, okay. Okay, we finish off the last one. We are all born our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of karma. This one you have to reflect and contemplate every day. Then you keep on reminding yourself, karma is so important. What am I doing with my life? Have I heed the advice of the Buddha to take care of karma? Have I followed the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind, strive on heedfulness? Just this contemplation can bring you very far. Then all the above is to counter First Noble Truth Reality. First Noble Truth Reality, you see the similarity. Birth, old age, sickness, and death is suffering. That's why you reflect. So that when you confront them, you have the right understanding that this form is not me. Element only, go the way of nature. So you don't have to worry about it getting old, getting sick, and die. The understanding is what? You make use of it to live life. Yeah, it's karmically conditioned out like a vehicle and a tool for you to use to live life. The physical body is a vehicle. The mind is a tool. That's why you use it wisely. The user of thought, the user of this vehicle is very important. If the user is wise, not deluded, then thought become right thought. Yes or not? Then this form become wholesome. You can use it without delusion, without negativity. So it's understanding. When you understand, your mind different. You live life differently. Okay, 2.4, meaning of craving. Craving means wanting things your way. Reacting means like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. Craving lead to suffering. True or not? When you have craving, there will be suffering as well. When you cannot get what you want, what happens? Yeah, you keep on craving. The Buddha never say you cannot have good food, good condition. Don't attach, that's it. Don't have craving to have it repeated or arise when there is no condition. When there is no condition, accept it. Where everything is condition arising. The nature's law is like that. Causes and conditions like that, things will be like that. That's why my teacher, Ajahn Yantra, very good. He said, we choose accept everything as natural. No more questions. Krishnamurti said, we accept what is. What is the reality, suchness. So all these are words of wisdom. Okay, next page. Oh, that one not important. The rest you go and read. The 1.8, the five universal law that governs life and existence, the three characteristics, 1.7. The 1.9, three evil roots, you go back and read. It describes clearly what are the three evil roots. Page 7, 1.9. Lobha is greed, which includes all of your greed, selfishness, lust, craving, covetousness, desire, deceitfulness, cunningness, etc. That's why you go back and reflect on it. Then only you know how to avoid evil. When these are there, they are root of all evil, make you evil. You have to abandon them or prevent them from arising. Oh, we got a visitor. Then moha is delusion. Delusion is sakadity, that conditions one's egoic mind to arise the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, leading to all the egoic personality of selfishness, craving, fear, worry, anxiety. Then dosa or ill will, they include your hatred, your anger, your envy, jealousy, dislike, aversion, negative emotion, sorrow, lamentation, etc. So all these are very important. Then the final summary of the first Noble Truth we have gone through. Then seven factor enlightenment, Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23, under 1.3, the words of wisdom of the Buddha. Verse 1, verse 2, verse 183, the advice of the Buddha. Then Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23 on Appamadavagga. Then you move on to page 7, 1.1, seeing beyond form and understanding what is Nibbana. This one is very important. You have to go through it. To develop basic wisdom, one must have the ability to see form as they are. And the unreality of form via its condition arising, impermanent, suffering, and non-self or empty nature, leading to our ability to see beyond form. Inability to see beyond form will result in form delusion, because one will grasp at external form via one's own delusion caused by identification with external form, thinking that they are also real. As form divides, so once we identify via identification with form, let us say with external form, which is the physical body, then one will create attachment to this physical body via delusion. Hence, worrying about it getting old, getting sick, and dying. It can also create duality of male and female gender, race identification, young and old, age identification, etc., leading to all the unnecessary fear, worry, anxiety, possibility of conflict and argument caused by external form identification and division. That's how thought divide and create all this wrong view, conflict, division and argument. Then you take side. Unless you are able to see beyond form, chances are you will not be able to see mind, because mind is much more subtle and intangible than solid external form. True or not, external form are so tangible, you can see, but your aggregate of mind, nothing, no solid form, not tangible at all, just movement inside only. So how can you see mind when you cannot see form? This is so gross, understand? Externally. Gross one also cannot see. That's why how to do citta nupassana. You have to move. That's why you learn to see form. The unreality of form. Then only you see beyond form. Then when you see beyond form, we are no different, isn't it? Correct or not? But inside, we are still different. You have a mind, I have a mind. Your mind has your own views and opinion and your conditioning. That's why you can still argue. But when you see beyond mind, what happens? Your nature, my nature, all nature is one. That's why when you see beyond form, beyond mind, you don't divide, you don't identify. Everything is just oneness. That's why no more problem. But the trouble with living beings is they never understand this. So we read on. Unless you are able to see beyond form, chances are you will not be able to see mind, because mind are much more subtle and intangible than solid external form. And unless you can see mind, the mundane mind, this is the thinking mind, conditionalizing mind as it is. We are the silent mind in sati. True wisdom cannot arise. See? I always emphasize on this. You don't have sati, the silent mind, to see the condition arising mind, mundane mind, you can never develop wisdom. But you will never understand who you are, what you are, and how you become like that, how you are conditioned into all the various mind states. For Nibbana is cessation of form and mind. So learn to see form, the unreality of form, then learn to see beyond form, leading to your ability to see the mundane mind clearly. This can then lead to the realization of impermanence, an empty nature of the mundane or thinking mind, leading to the ability to see beyond the mundane mind via the silent mind to realize one's true nature, which is beyond thought and beyond mind. At the mundane mind level, one still clings on to one's views and opinion and religious labor and belief. Hence the division again. At mind level, leading to all the conflict and argument caused by one's delusion as before. Then note, words divine, we are form and thought identification due to sakayaditi and ignorance. Hence, only if one can see things as they are via the direct seeing without words. See, the word is, the key important word is without words, concept and labeling. Only then there is no more form and thought delusion to condition one's grasping and clinging, leading to all the suffering. That is, if you cannot see form and the unreality of form, then you will not be able to see beyond form. And everything you come to perceive via your mundane mind, which is consciousness only, will be like so real and so meaningful to you. Hence the delusion or sakayaditi. Also, Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, mind is a forerunner of all things, and mind is chief. And everything arises from the mind, so one must be wary of mind. That's why you have to cultivate and see clearly into that mind. Otherwise, you cannot develop wisdom. Then we move on. All this you can skip. You go back and read. No, skip. Then you go to page 21. 21 is important. Meaning of we accord with condition or flow with the Dhamma. The word accord means not to resist. Hence, there is harmony and no conflict. Understand not? Accord. Learn to accept, not to resist. No matter what happens. The moment you react, wherever there is fear, unhappiness, there is delusion. The errors are there. That's why don't react. Accord and flow. Accept. But doesn't mean you agree, understand or not? You accept first so that you don't react. You are at peace. Then there's clarity. Then you weigh your option. What can I do? How can I move? What is the most amicable way that I can come out with so that I can resolve this thing amicably so that nobody get hurt, no negativity? That is how you act. The word accord means not to resist. Hence, there is harmony and no conflict. Conflict means disharmony, argument. You have to avoid all this. So to flow with Dhamma means the same. That is, don't resist or argue. We are accepting things as they are. We are seeing things as they are, without delusion, and let things be. It's like martial art. If you were to resist and defend via rigid kung fu, then both will get hurt. But if you can use Tai Chi to flow with it, Then Tai Chi will send the force back to the aggressor, who will be hurt by its own force. True or not? The Chinese say, Pan Liang Po Qian Qing. That's why they flow with you. Then they use your force. When you are at the weakest point, when you cannot move, then they just move. That momentum will hit back. But if you practice rigid Kung Fu, means what? You want to argue, you want to be right, then you resist, understand? When you resist, both get hurt, correct? The one who punch you and the one who resists, both get hurt, understand? But if you understand flow and echo like Tai Chi, you receive the thing, you flow with it. When you punch, what happens? The furthest you can punch is when your arm finish, and then no more power, no more potency. During that time, your momentum all there. Then people just move it back to you. You cannot kau kau. That's why he don't receive. When he receives you, you know, he get hurt. That's why Dhamma is the same. When you flow an echo, you don't get hurt. But doesn't mean you agree what he do. You don't accept what he do. You accept him for what he is. Then you weigh your option with clarity of mind. You tell yourself, how can I avoid the punch or the blow? That's why you flow echo, then you don't resist it. Using the Tai Chi understanding, you just send the momentum back. That's how you live life. Then 1.4 is the phenomenal world or illusionary world. Definition of phenomena. This one, remember, anything that is perceivable by the mind is a phenomena. Then how do you know the world? Via your consciousness and mental perception, isn't it? And since consciousness and mental perception are just mental images in your mind that arise and pass away continuously. Get this clear. Get this clear. Understand this clearly. I read again. Since consciousness and mental perception are just mental images, no reality, understand not? In our mind, that arise and pass away continuously. Hence the reason why it said the phenomenal world is actually an illusionary world of consciousness. That's why it's empty, understand not? Just images come and go in the mind, telling you story. Then consciousness is like a great magician, make it real. Illusion is, and you deludedly get entangled. Consciousness create illusion for you to see, and you believe the illusion. That's why everything like real. That's why the phenomenal world of consciousness, if you cannot see, you will get trapped. The Mahayana also got a very famous saying, perception of form is consciousness, whereas its non-perception is wisdom. This one is very important. When you perceive form, means what? Kan san, si san, what is that? That is mundane seeing, isn't it? Understand or? Well, that is perception, consciousness. Mundane people, they see by word, labor. But when you have direct seeing, kan san, that's why the non-perception of the word and the labor is wisdom. Understand? When you see things as they are, there is no word, that reality. Understand? Meditation is silence your mind to see things as they are without words and concept. Then you awaken. When you immediately recall through mind, memory, and perceive the word, you never see. Understand? Take for example, microphone. When I say microphone, everybody say, the one, the stick that Brother Theo hold and speak on. You never look at this, understand? This whole thing got no words, understand? And then you can see its beauty, its reality, this whole thing. That's why I remember after 1989, everything I see is so different, so pristine and so beautiful. But the word is not there. Then I see everything. I remember a joke last time Yun Chan used to say. One day he put on something on the head. The husband cannot see, Raymond, never observe. That's why she was laughing. Because they are not looking at Yun Chan through the direct seeing on. He perceived her to be the wife. Take for granted. That's why I never see. You know. You come back and you ask your husband, do you notice anything different? Yeah, already case of soy. Very good. Then the wife very angry. Yeah, sometimes the husband just say, Kwami la, ne lao le koko. Kwa bu kao. That's why when you don't have love, when you don't have this feeling, you tell people all, and I tell you, your wife will be very angry, very unhappy. Why can't you just apply some Noble Eightfold Path and just look clearly? Oh yeah, today you look very different. You are very much more happier. Oh yeah, now I notice you have changed, you have dyed your hair. You have done facial, you look more fresh. Then you are sensitive. You really look. No, nowadays they say money not a situation, but the wife got money. Otherwise he wouldn't do. If he got to look at you to spend your money, I tell you, the wife don't want to do it. Unless you marry that type of wife, like Steffi asks you how much money you have. Then that one will use your money. So Dhamma is like that. When you see, make sure you see. You see with the true mind. You don't see with the mundane mind that label, identify, create concept, stir the mind. So, because of your views and opinion. You don't see with understanding. You don't have the direct seeing. Mundane seeing. Every time I also see like that. See, react. Hear, react. Smell, taste, tactile, do the same. Habitual tendency. Year in, year out, all like that. Then you go retreat. Wow, fantastic meditation. Very calm, very peaceful. You think you transform. You want jnana. You go out, square one again. Because you never straighten your view. What I say. You never know what is direct seeing. You don't have sati. You don't know how to see. Not the Hokkien one. See. See is die. Then he said, brother, you say you don't know how to see. The BLC. Die also don't know. Know how to live, but don't know how to die. But my teacher, Acharyantra, said this very good word. He said, you must learn how to die before you die. Understand not? If you know how to die before you die, you are the most beautiful living being. How to die? Die of all your defilement. No more defilement, you are beautiful. Then when you know how to die, means you know this form of mind is not you. That's why when you have this understanding, you become very beautiful. So perception of form is consciousness, whereas its non-perception is wisdom. This is most profound, and the enlightened one will understand it. Now you understand why Mahayana always say that the phenomenal world is a world of consciousness. This is also the reason why the Surangama Sutta says, consciousness created the world and the continent, the stars and the universe. And the knower, in inverted comma, becomes a living being. Through thought and form delusion, the knower deludedly cling onto the fine aggregate of form and mind, or the so-called living being, thinking that it's real. And this is what they are. Hence, the deluded living being clinging onto the false becomes the traveler in space and time, wandering through samsara and undergo birth and death for eternity. That is what the heedless one, the puttijana, do. Understand? Because they cling on to this. Every life, the segmented form and mind, you think real, you get angry, you get emotional, you get fearful. Then you do all the funny things, thinking that you are real. The egoic mind is so egoic. So Dhamma can be pretty simple when you understand, but if you are deluded, you will grasp and cling, you will not believe what people tell you. You will never investigate. But to you is, how can this is be not me? You can go and ask. Everybody say you crazy lah, this one not you. You check like Polian say, you pinch you feel it like pain not me I pinch you and see pain. But when you don't penetrate with the direct seeing, with the awakening, you can never understand. Where you use mundane knowledge to talk about real and unreal. Real and unreal is not about the thought, not about the mind. Real and unreal is about wisdom, understanding. When you understand, it's different. Now we go to the note. True mind does not stir through suchness or lu zu putong. So the Mandarin word is very beautiful, zu zu putong. That's why the Buddha is called July 4, the Tathagata. Only the mundane mind stir via delusion. Your true mind never stir. The true mind got nothing. Cannot come out and leave. That's why to come to this world, you need the form and mind. Condition arising form and mind. This is your vehicle, your tool. The true nature, the true mind cannot come out and leave. There is no word. There is nothing inside there. But it can be connected to that nature. That awareness nature without word. The unborn. The one that is eternally there. Mundane mind without wisdom is the discriminating thinking mind. Understand? That's why mundane mind is not only the thinking mind. It discriminates a lot. Mandarin word is very good. What is the Mandarin word? Fen bie xing. Understand? That's why it discriminates. Understand? Fen bie xing. When you start to discriminate, fen bie, that's why duality arises, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, all this arises. Then definition of hallucinatory, thinking that it's real but it's actually not real. That's why the mundane, puttujana, they always had this hallucinatory consciousness. To them it's like very real. But it's just a world of consciousness, come and go, come and go. How real can it be? Images inside. Like the cinema, the white screen in front. How real can it be? Only the light pixel. Come and go, come and go. But you can watch the show, the flash show, until you're drawn inside. So your senses, your consciousness that arise, they are like magician, like the film show in front. So if you are deluded, you don't have the direct seeing, the clear seeing, you can be deluded by it. You can be actually fooled by it. Then J. Krishnamurti said, the observer is the observed. You know what is the observer is the observed. Like the Buddha said, no one to see. In the seeing, it's only the seeing consciousness. Understand? Means the observer is the observed. Means there is nobody to observe. Understand? The one that is observed is the seeing consciousness. Understand? It's just a seeing consciousness. That's why both teaching is the same, but they use different words. The observer is the observed, leading to seeing things as they are. We are the direct seeing without word. In a similar way, the Buddha also taught, in the seeing, it's only the seeing consciousness, and there is no one to see. Hence, no delusion. Otherwise, the moment you associate and cling on to what you see or what you observe, delusion or sakayaditi has already arisen. Because you always have this preconceived egoic mind that say, I see. Who is the I? You never ask. You never inquire. You never investigate. You always say, I see. I am angry. Understand? If the observer is the observed, means what? That's why a lot of people do nothing. Anger, anger, anger. You never ask this question, like Krishnamurti say. If the observer is the observer, means what? The observer observe what? Anger, understand? But the observer is the observer, means anger is a condition arising entity belong to part of the mundane mind, understand? It's not your true mind, understand? That's why the observer is the observer. But human beings' delusion is what? You separate yourself from anger, you know? You say anger is not me, you know? But the anger is within the form and mind, you understand? It's a content of consciousness. Can follow that? And you go and separate, you know? Then what happened? Anger is an evil root. You don't want anger to be there. What you do? You control, suppress, and try to do away anger. That's why this is what they are doing in the meditation. You suppress, you go into energy field, you don't want to get angry. And you say, yan. When people disturb you, yan. You are suppressing the anger. Anger was never you. But it's part of the fire aggregate of form and mind. Content of consciousness. Condition arising. That's why the observer is the observer. Yeah? The thought that observes this, they are one entity. Why you want to separate them? So if they are one, means what? Means anger is part of form and mind, not you. Then don't try to suppress, control, and do away with it. The problem doesn't lie there. The problem lies where? Your wrong view when you see something, or hear something, or think of something, understand? The problem is at the wrong view, but you keep on pointing to the anger, understand? It's just like Chinese medicine and Western medicine, or pain, take Panadol, but actually originate from another organ, understand? But you never heal the pain, understand? You only temporary relief, understand? That's why you suppress, you control, oh, I got no more anger. Means what? You think you already progress. Now I no longer get angry. No matter what he say, I no more angry. Because he is like that one lah. When he say he is like that one lah, means he still got anger. Then like the pastor say, easy to forgive, but cannot forget. You think he forgive or not? On the one side, you say easy to forgive. Where they say forgive and forget. He say easy to forgive but cannot forget. Because what he did to me was so horrible. Means he never forgive. When he forgive, he will never have that type of thought anymore. When you forgive somebody, you don't hate no more evil. You root it out. That's why when you contradict yourself without understanding, you don't have Dhamma. You don't understand what you say. You are being deluded. You are caught in it. So all these are very beautiful teaching. So you can understand, you can penetrate, and you can free your mind. So this book is really a gem. You can go back and read. Then turn to page 29. Oh, Joyce called. No, 11:20 something. Oh, he wants to come and do Dana. Oh, not coming. Oh, okay. Then never mind. Okay, it's okay. Yeah. Yeah. Turn to page 29. 1.1. So this one is a refresher course. Brother re-emphasized the importance of understanding the following. What is meditation? So that we understand what we are doing in the name of meditation. And this will keep us always in focus. This one you have to reflect, contemplate, and go through it until it sinks in. Then you will know how to meditate and you will progress very fast. First step is to train the mind to be heedful. We are using a skillful means or an object of meditation to anchor the mind in awareness or mindfulness, so that the mind is relaxed, aware, silent, and mindful within. Every word is very important. You have to understand it. That is the first step. Then the second step is to make use of this trained mind in silent awareness to see things as they are, to develop the meditation as taught by the Buddha, namely the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, or daily mindfulness, sati sampajana, the four foundation of mindfulness, and the three turning of the four noble truth, and of course finally the noble eightfold path. So when you do these two, you become heedful. That's why it's called apamada. So when you are focused, means whatever you do in the name of meditation, all those questions gone. You always ask yourself, am I doing this? Am I training the mind to be mindful? Am I stabilizing it? Am I using it to meditate? To see things as they are? To cultivate Four Foundation Mindfulness? To cultivate Noble Eightfold Path? To do the reflection and contemplation on the Four Noble Truths and its three turning? If you are doing all this, this is right attention. Understand that? Yoniso manasikara. Then the unarisen defilement or asava will not arise. The arisen will cease. But if you don't reflect and contemplate and do this, you pay wrong attention. E yoniso manasikara. Then all those defilements will arise because you attend to things that are unfit for attention. When you attend to things that are fit for attention, that is the cultivation. The aim of meditation is to realize a state of enlightenment that is beyond thought, beyond time, means beyond psychological time. Because the Dhamma is timeless or akaliko in Pali. Thought-based meditation is limited into the field of thought. Hence, it cannot free the mind or lead to a realization to realize a state that is beyond thought and beyond time. Because the moment of thought is psychological time. Every time thought arises, psychological time arises, and that's how mental time arises. This mental time is not physical time. That's why the timeless refer to mental time. When you don't think, there is no mental creation, there is no mental time. That's why there is a cessation of form and mind, timeless, akaliko. The moment you think, mental time arises. Psychological time arises. Then diligently cultivate the five spiritual faculties of Saddha, Sati, Virya, Samadhi, and Panya to overcome the five hindrances of mind. Then the danger of having self-delusion and not comprehending what Sakaya Ditti and self-delusion is. This one you must reflect. Every time egoic mind is there, when you have delusion, greed, hatred, delusion will arise. You will fall, you will grasp, you will cling. That's why I reflect and contemplate until very, very clear and see the danger of Sakaya Ditti. Every time you deludedly grasp and cling and hold, that's why you always see things the mundane way. Whatever that appears logical may not be the truth, but the actual reality is the other way. The importance of using mindfulness to observe in inverted comma and understand how your mind stir or get conditioned into mental thinking or activity, leading to all the emotions and reactions to sense experience that condition one's suffering, etc. We are comprehending the famous Mahayana saying. This one is very good. Qi xing dong nian. You understand the meaning of Qi Xing is when you arise the mind, it will start to think. Because when your mind arises, mind is a forerunner of all things, then Sankara come to be when there is ignorance. That's why Mahayana is a very good expression. When you arise that mind, Qi Xing, Tong, Tong is move. Your activity of mind, your thinking start to move. Qi Xing, Tong Nian. The arising of mind creates thinking. Hence, stirring the mind. Or in Theravada term is avijja paccaya sankhara. It's all related. Ignorant condition activity of mind, the first tooling of paticca samuppada, dependent origination. Originally, before the stirring, the mind is already in a meditative state of inner peace, inner silence, and inner still awareness within. So the stirring of the mind only comes about when we do not have the wisdom or right view and understanding of this fundamental principle of the original mind or the true mind. then through our own delusion or ignorance, we cause our mundane mind to arise, hence stirring via our reaction to sense experience at every moment of sense door consciousness. Therefore, you need to train the mind to have the silent inner awareness and clarity to see all this clearly. Then there is no more delusion, thereby understanding that it can just let things be. Then there is no more suffering or problem. And with this understanding, tranquility will return by not trying to do anything. We are using the thought to suppress or control. Don't even note. This is the third way that the Buddha taught us. Just silent, relaxed, aware. Everything will cease to be. That is, just be patient to maintain the silent mind with clear awareness within, and let everything return to its original state before it's stirring. Always remember, when there is no delusion or ignorance, then there is no stirring of mind. Hence, having the understanding that only wisdom frees the mind. There is the moment you have wisdom, your mind will not stir, and you are free. So no need to do anything after that, because things are just the way they are. True suchness, ta-ta-ta. So this is all very clear. Okay, the rest you can go and read. Then turn to page 33. We are finishing already. Just in time, just in time. 1.3. This is what my teacher always teach me. Page 33, 1.3. Page 33, Some important truths that Brother Teo had learned from his teacher, Praachanyantra Amaro Bhikkhu, a very wise and famous Thai monk, during the early days of his cultivation, 1988 to 1992. Now, this was the period I met him very often. The first thing he told me was this. I always share with you all. Mind is mind, body is body. Body is never the mind. The mind is never the body. But body is most important. But body is important too, because both body and mind must harmonize to help each other live life and develop the meditation. And we choose to take care of mind, because mind is more important. So you have to know that form and mind, they are two separate entities. That's like the first of the 16 stages of insight knowledge or jnana. What is the first one? Nama rupa? Parichena jnana. Able to discern clearly between form and mind. What is form? What is mind? A lot of people thought this was very easy, you know. He said, Vatio, I think I know. How? I got a mind, the knowing mind. The knowing mind that knows something, that is the form in the mind. So, the knowing is the mind. That's how. First jnana, he said. You agree or not? This one is knowledge. Understand? The real one is when you are doing your meditation, where you can really understand clearly within, mind is mind, form is form. Understand? That's why when you silent, you will understand. There is a mind that is silent, that is aware of what is going on, without words, understand or not? Then there is this phenomena that the mind perceive and recognize, understand or not, moving inside there, no word. Then if you meditate and relax into it, because there is no word, there is no hindrance of mind, nothing, understand or not? It's just the reality. Then you can accept it. Then there is no reaction to it. That's why you can be at peace with it. Then you can discern clearly. Mind is mind, the knowing element. The one that is going through all those things, the one that is perceivable by the mind, is a phenomena. And that is the form in the mind. So able to discern, you have to silence and really go in. The one that I was able to break free during the year 1988, I think, end of 88. I just listened to him when he mentioned this. I become very brave. You know? I was going through an 8 precept. Then I was sitting until the second day. I think after long sitting, we are walking, sitting, walking, sitting. That time I don't know how to do lie down yet. Then there was this pain emerging from the leg because after a long time I was sitting, very sharp. Then that time I already knew what to do. But I only need somebody to tell me something about the mind. That's why I heard him say this. You know. Then I become very brave. You know. I say, I have faith in Prachan because I can feel his energy, I can receive his Dhamma, I can understand what he's sharing and teaching me. So I have faith in what he said. Then I say, body is just a body, mind is mind, mind never the body, body never the mind. Then I recall what the Buddha actually vowed before he sat on the Bodhi tree, the last sitting, you remember? Not until he become enlightened, he will not arise from that seat. Even when the body, what happened? When the blood, everything dry up also, he will not stand up. But not so brave as Lord Buddha Sakyamuni, because still got family. So I tell myself, I say, okay, body is just a body. Mind is mind. The two are different. So I become very brave. You know. I silence my mind to find out. You know. Then it becomes so sharp, you know, that sensation, even though I never labor. You know. But it's for me to understand. No. Then I endure. Now you understand Sabba Asavak Sutta. Certain thing you must restrain, your precept. Certain thing you must endure. Remember? Hot and cold. When you are in a forest, a mosquito or what. Like here, no aircon, you have to endure. You got two choices. Complain and say, oh, yo, Suyan, brother Suyan, how got aircon? Brother, how's the aircon? Why here no aircon? So hot, so humid. Oh, you like that? The defilement will be there. Yeah, you cannot accept the reality. You cannot be at peace. So you have to endure. We are conditioned like that. You have to endure. So then you are at peace. And when you have gratitude, it becomes beautiful. Isn't it? You should rejoice. We are people has provided us with the condition to come here to meditate. And we have the condition to listen to such beautiful sharing and Dhamma. And we can partake in such wholesomeness. There is so much joy. What is a little bit of sacrifice, enduring? When you are serious about Dhamma, you don't complain about all these things. Well, these are all petty. Doesn't mean anything. When I can receive the Dhamma, the forest also I go on. I will go anywhere as long as there is Dhamma. So when you have this understanding, your mind state is different. So that's why I become very brave. I silence my mind and I just observe, silent. Then I start to understand that pulling sensation, everything. Then it becomes so sharp, you know, that sensation, so sharp, you know, the phenomenon, until the thought come in and interfere. You know. You sit some more, you are going to paralyze. Oh, the thought tell you, you know, what you do? Immediately come up. Then I recall what my teacher say, you know. I say, no, body is just a body. Mind is mind. Body never the mind. Mind never the body. So I sat through, you know. I relax and I silent. It was during precisely that moment, that's why, because I endured through. All of a sudden, from nowhere, you know, it just flashed through. Then there's this very bright light in the brain here. Remember? And you really don't believe. It was so amazing. You know, that shift of consciousness. All of a sudden, that brightness, then my nature suddenly, how come like that? That sensation, that so-called pulling and all those things, that thing just gone. No more. Then I can see, you know, that mind is so different, no? That mind is so clear, so bright, so brave, no? And the awareness is totally different when it's without craving. Completely different mind. Then I tell myself, cannot be. It was there, no? How come suddenly gone? Then I went down and checked, no? I bring the awareness back to here, specific phenomenal awareness. I bring it back there. Then I realize really gone, no? Because after that flash, that shift of consciousness, that chi no more block, no? Because that mind know how to relax into it, no? Then I realize it's completely different. Then I realize the knowing element, the awareness that is aware of the phenomena, these two are separate, no? They got no connection at all, no? No reality at all. And since that moment until now, end of 1988, until now, I never have any problem with sitting pain. Yeah, no more problem. But I understood what that thing is. Yeah. Sometimes I can sit for 3, 4 hours, 4, 5 hours, I just sit. But now, after so long, why do I want to sit? Sit to show off. No point. That's why I got time. I go back and rest. Because this body getting old already. That's the, I don't need to sit technically. But sometimes to give you faith, I come and sit. That's the, not to say I try to deceive you. No, it's to give you faith. A lot of people would think, Brother T also never sit. Why must I sit? Then they go walk around and do all those funny things. But when I sit that time, you're not around. Some of you still playing high and seek and doing other things. You are not serious about Dhamma yet. Then now you say, I never sit. Where you want to compare. But when that time, I full time, 24 hour cultivating, you never come and see. Non-stop, whole day Dhamma. Fully aware. That's why that 3 years, 86 to 89, continuous cultivation. And that is really that change this form of mind to develop the understanding. That's how it penetrated. It was dead serious about life. Then I read on. The second thing that he says is we choose to accept everything as natural. Because only form and mind and mighty nature rolling by, not so real, and not what you think. This one is so powerful. Then when I heard it, I was full of joy. I already contemplated my own wisdom. People are just the way they are. Angry people do angry things. Deluded people do deluded things. Selfish people do selfish things. Then he came out with this even more beautiful. We choose to accept everything as natural. Correct, no? Angry people do angry things, it's very natural of them, isn't it? When they are deluded, they will do deluded things, isn't it? Very natural of them, isn't it? So nature is just the way it is. Then because he said, only form and mind, understand? Namarupang. So when you penetrate, no reality. So-called my son, my loved one, my wealth, my whatever possession, this only the fool's lament. Well, in reality, it's just form and mind, condition arising, cause of it. No reality. That's why you don't go and worry about life. Are you all my son or my children now? This life, your son, your children. Previous life may be coming. And that's come and ask for coming death. You somehow say, my son, my children. Your last time, you deludedly do all this and cause people worry about you so much. Then people suffer. And now you become the parent. The children do all these funny things. Then you attach. Then you suffer. Because you did that to another parent you don't know. So, delusion can be like that when you don't have the ultimate true understanding of form and mind. When you deludedly grasp, cling, and hold, thinking that it's real. Okay, the third truth that he shared with me is, we choose to contemplate all Dhamma until they are very, very clear. Importance of second turning. This I told you before. Then the highest meditation or the real meditation is, he just told me this in 1987, 88. we choose aware of all action and all movement in the present moment. That is daily mindfulness meditation. Then only I realized I have to yet to start the real meditation. I started in 1971, meditation. Not until 1987. I was caught in anapanasati, continuous absorption. Because my mind was like very strong in samadhi. Continuous mindfulness. Like nothing can move it. The energy in the heart here, so still. Lightning strike also cannot even stir. Oh, that time you thought, oh, I got him already, get it. Then I came out to work. Then I start to touch money. Then I realized, hey, you still got greed, can move on inside. Oh, then I realized, anusaya, the latent tendency is still there. Want to become lawyer, want to do master, or want to become successful. I say, how come still got all this type of thing? Then I realized, not rooted out. The energy of the clear water. When you don't stir, the dust all settle down. Understand? But when there is condition, you stir, not rooted out, the latent tendencies arise. That's why no amount of retreat you do samatha, energy field, can free you. Because I went through that. The state was like, you are enlightened. That time I was still in the uni. Just before I graduate. Because in the first year, I told you the first day I met K. Sri Damananda, then I went back to the room, I meditate. I don't know how to meditate. First time I look into the mind, he pointed to the brain. No? I thought that is where the mind is. No? Then I went into one point, no? Then I pierced through. No? Then I went to the formulas, right? Then that short moment I came out, I thought half an hour at the most. But when I checked the watch, I meditate at midnight 12, I want my roommate to sleep first. I saw 4 a.m. No? I was there sitting 4 hours. No? First time I do meditation, no? I don't know what is meditation. No? And I was there for 4 hours. I was in this state of very strong energy field, samadhi, one-pointedness. Then I went into the formless rhyme, infinite space, traveling out. Then during that time, very funny, the energy was with me for many days. Then my thought tell me, this must be the real meditation. Never experienced that type of stillness, the calmness and the silence before. I can be with you for so long. Then later I like to meditate. Never knew that these are samatha, absorption. And I didn't go in through the jhanic factor. No. I went in through continuous mindfulness or anapanasati. I went into apana samadhi. I didn't stop at upachara samadhi. But that time nobody taught me. But it's meant for me to learn so that I can understand and later on share with people. If I don't go through all this, I cannot be telling you what happened. That's why the Samatha Vipassana book, I am able to describe, was because that was what I went through. Then I knew about this one-pointedness and concentration because my second last teacher, she did that. And I heard many of her description and sharing. That's why I knew what those things is. And she always tell me, even my last teacher, so yeah, never touch energy field. That is not the true way. Energy field has a lot of what they call attraction. A lot of people very interested because very fantastic on a lot of experience and happening, like you are fantastic. The experience is so wonderful. But ultimately, if it doesn't bring about wisdom to liberate your mind, that is not the true teaching. Always remember that only wisdom liberate and free the mind. Otherwise, your latent tendency, anusaya, will be trapped. Then the next one is importance of having a good daily religious routine to train the mind to cultivate puja, metta, and meditate every day. This one was what Achayantra taught to me. He said we must maintain a good religious routine. So last time, every time do that. Every day before I sleep, I meditate. After I wake up, first thing I meditate. Then ever mindful. Then I develop daily mindfulness in between. Then I do my own puja, my own metta. During the early year, my metta very powerful, very strong. I can read it out from my heart. Or no. And the non-human, the dogs, the animal, they can feel on many experiences during the early day. Then the last one is importance of constantly cultivating the five spiritual faculties of mind and the keeping of the five precepts. That's why this sila and the cultivation of the five spiritual faculty, you have to do it. Yeah? Okay, that's it. Finish. Sada, sada, sada. The rest you read. 1.4 also very important. 1.4. We got time or not? Oh, no more time, huh? Okay, we stop. We have to have our quick lunch, then we come back here maybe 1 o'clock. Yeah. Okay, we will end by doing the salutation to the Sangha. Arahang sama sabuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami Supatipanno bhagavato sāvaka sangho sanghang namāmi. Okay, you can have your lunch. We don't waste time anymore. We go there straight away. We make the offering. Then if Brother Lim is there, we have to...